82 in Anaheim, 77 in Long Beach, 73 in downtown L.A., 82 degrees in Burbank.
Is it true we may get some spittle out of Hurricane Dolly in Southern California?
I have not heard that.
No, I just thought I saw a headline that Orange County may get a shower or two just out of the...
Maybe that's something coming up from Pacific.
Well, the Pacific, I think it's... Is it Faustino? The F.
Faustino?
Well, they skipped E.
I don't know. That's the name I thought I heard this morning, like Faustino. What?
I had this with my 3 12-year-old boys in the car this morning acting just like John. Exactly.
I don't know why that's so funny to you.
Well, it was funny to the 12-year-old boys, too.
Over Faustino?
Exactly.
Seriously?
Oh, I am right? Is that the name of it?
I'm not sure. They were going on of all of the names, and it became hysterical when they got to the...
Well, he is comparable to a 12-year-old boy.
Exactly.
I don't understand.
I don't know.
I never know when I'm going to set him off, do I?
I know.
That's a comical name for a hurricane.
I said, think 12-year-old boy.
I may have misheard it, but I know there's another one, the Pacific Storm.
He doesn't have a 12-year-old boy. You do. That's why you understand me more than he does.
Not that she understands you. She's kind of shaking her head in there.
She knows what she's dealing with, right? She deals with it at home, and she deals with it here.
Exactly. I'll look it up, see if I can find it, because we got Dolly there hitting Texas, but it is down to a Category 1 with 75-mile-per-hour winds.
Why don't they have one named Evelyn, Mom? Huh? What about Bob? Is there Hurricane Bob?
I think there is. Well, they have a list.
All the names get picked at one time or another, unless it's really, really bad, then they retire the name.
I don't think there's going to be another Katrina.
No, that's it for Katrina.
They're not going to.
You know, I have a friend named Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And
changed her name, did she?
Well, you know, she went with her family to an Angels game, right? And she had an Angels jersey with the name Katrina on the back. And it was right after the hurricane. Mm-hmm. And people started booing her as she walked through the stands.
Wow, that's pretty dumb.
You imagine that? You're getting booed over your name. All right, well, let's... We got Schwarzenegger news.
Yeah, we got a brief piece of news, this is actually funny. Schwarzenegger is threatening to defer wages for 200,000 state employees because of the budget problem. And what he says he's going to do is pay the minimum wage until they reach a budget deal.
Yes.
That means...
Can he do that?
...that the state workers...
Yes.
...would get the federal minimum wage of $6.55 an hour. What do you do with, he changes a lot of letters to W's, and then when he gets a W, how do you do that? He changes W's to V's,
W's or V's.
Verkas and Vages. What do you get when you get a V, though?
Huh? Well, I guess it stays a V. I don't think it goes to a W.
Yes.
That amount is $1.45 an hour less than California's minimum wage, the $6.55 an hour. He said that they would get all the rest of their money after the budget deal is reached, and wouldn't you know it, the workers' unions are already threatening legal action to block this.
I don't think you can do that.
Aren't
they all in unions? They're all in unions, government workers. You can't just start paying them a minimum wage.
He says it's a crisis. He's taking emergency action.
We don't have the cash,
Mr. Colbelt.
He's trying to look like he's in charge. You know, if we got a minute later, Dan Walters, the oversized Sacramento Bee columnist, he's actually got a pretty funny column, actually about how Schwarzenegger is becoming like Jerry Brown was in the 1970s, where after a while everybody just got sick of Jerry Brown and started laughing at him.
Yeah, you jumped the shark, essentially. Yeah.
And then Brown just couldn't get elected to anything anymore. Remember, he kept running for senator, he started running for president. But Jerry Brown was not elected to any major office until he became attorney general a few years back. A couple of years ago. Before that, he was like the mayor of Oakland, but...
Yeah, he's made a comeback, though. Yeah, now he may run for governor again.
Right. So he's, and now he's lost all his hair, so he looks like a different Jerry Brown. And, 30 years have passed, so a lot of people have died. There's a new generation.
He's quite familiar with us.
Yeah. Oh, we've had him on a number of times.
Well, we met him at that. Remember, we got that award at that prosecutor's dinner?
Oh, yes, that's right. We did meet
him. And I did talk to him, and he just looked at me like, John and Ken show, of course.
Oh, God, we talked with him back in New Jersey when he was running for president in 92. First time we talked with him.
Oh, yeah.
He was talking from a phone booth in Jersey City. That's what I remember.
Oh, you're right. He was running for president.
He was running for president. He had no money. And he's talking to us out of a phone booth because there were no cell phones then.
Well, Ed Royce is going to join us now. The congressman from Fullerton, the Republican, apparently has the solution for lower gas prices.
All right. So let's get Ed on here. Ed.
Good to be with you, fellas.
Yes, the American Energy Act.
It's good to know that you're going to solve this whole gas price problem. What are you going to? What's your idea?
Well, here's the idea. Right now, we've got a situation where all of the oil properties, all of the reserves, have been seized. The Saudis some years ago seized our oil over there. Venezuela did the same thing. Mexico has March 18th, which is Oil Expropriation Day, which they celebrate. That's the day they seized all the oil off the coast there that was U.S. investment. And the consequence is that over 90% of the oil now is controlled by foreign governments, many of them not exactly friendly to us, and they keep decreasing production. So the idea here with the American Energy Act is to lift the moratoriums that we have here in the United States on drilling, both off the continental shelf, the outer continental shelf, and up in Alaska, and also to lift the moratoriums on the use of such things as coal to gas liquefaction, which is not allowed here right now, and to lift the prohibition on using oil shale. We have taken roughly.
Well, wait, let's stop for a couple seconds because I don't know what these terms mean. What is coal to gas liquefaction? What is that? Can you explain that simply?
Absolutely. That's where you take coal, you run it through a process, as they do in South Africa and as they did in Germany for years, and you make gasoline out of it. And at the price of gas today, well, you could do it for about $40 a barrel, you see. So
why don't they do it now?
Is
it,
well, we have prohibitions. We have moratoriums that have been placed on all of this activity.
And the reason for that is what?
The environmentalist community, and for example, they don't want us to take any oil shale out of Montana or Utah or anything.
Right, but on this coal to gas liquefaction, how would that harm the environment?
They feel it's not clean burning enough. You know, the long-term vision that they have is more solar, and we need to do that too. But our problem right now.
But that would be an air pollution problem then?
Yeah, they view that as okay. Burning petroleum, basically, which they're not in favor
of. Now explain what oil shale is. That's oil that's actually encased in shale rock?
That is exactly right. We have enough of that to last for several hundred years. And
how expensive is that to get out of rock? That seems like that would be difficult.
Probably about $50 a barrel, and oil's at, over 130, 140. So you can make a lot of money. We could have some 800 billion barrels that are recoverable with current technology, and that would last for a couple hundred years. That's triple the known reserves, by the way, of Saudi Arabia. So here's the problem. As these foreign governments are basically, with OPEC, reducing supply, our Federal Reserve Chairman testified last week that supply has become so tight that a 1% increase in oil supply would shoot the price down 10% for gasoline. And clearly, if you got more than a 1% increase in supply, you could drive it down even farther.
Why is a country like Saudi Arabia decreasing production?
Because it's in their interest to drive the price up.
But why did they not do it for the last, 20 years, let's say?
We've finally gotten to the point with the nationalization of so many companies offshore by the governments. Venezuela, Saudi Arabia, all these governments, Mexico, they're all in the same state now.
Right,
nationalized, so now they
can
control
it. Wasn't that all true 5 years ago, though?
Well, they've gotten wiser and wiser in terms of restricting supply to the point now where supply is this tight, and we, in the meantime, frankly, especially the last couple of years, have just foreclosed every single option for new energy. I mean, we're not allowed to do nuclear. We're not allowed to, build any more refineries in the country. It's been 30 years since we've had a refinery built. We literally have no program here to put any more inputs into the system that are going to increase, supply. So the bill does that, and then it provides tax incentives for businesses and families
to purchase
more fuel-efficient vehicles.
Why do you think the price has gone up so quickly, so fast? Because everything that's in play now was in play a year ago, even 6 months ago. Why? It seems to me that there is some hidden force here that hasn't been explained.
Well, there might be, but according to the chairman of the Federal Reserve, when he looked at it, what he sees is that the production, for example, in Mexico is decreasing very, very quickly. Production by the Saudis has frankly decreased since they really got control. The Algerians and the Saudis have a plan now to actually decrease the net amount of oil available. In the meantime, India and China are building cars very rapidly and are increasing their usage of oil.
Now, Saudi Arabia doing that just to screw us?
Yeah, yeah. The Saudis figure they can transfer about $10 trillion from our economy into OPEC, into the cartel countries, and the Gulf states are the biggest players. So that's a huge benefit to them if they can keep prices this high.
All right. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Because, you know, all your ideas have a lot of there's a lot of resistance to them. So we got to talk about that.
Ed, yeah, this is Congressman Ed Royce from Fullerton, and he's a co-sponsor of the brand new American Energy Act to try to get us lower gas prices. And for you, Giggle Boy?
Yes.
Hurricane Fausto.
Fausto now.
Where did you see that?
I thought you said Faustino.
I found Faye.
Everybody is just, let's just calm down. I had it wrong to answer Mr. Colbert's question. I mixed it up with actor David Faustino.
Oh.
It is Hurricane Fausto.
That's even funnier.
It is a Category 2 storm in the Pacific.
Uh-huh. Oh, the Eastern North Pacific names. Got it.
Now, before that,
yeah,
because she asked before, the E was Alida.
But that's not the same storms that are hitting down there.
And in the Atlantic, yeah, before Dolly was Cristobal. So, John, you can have fun with all these names.
Well, these are like illegal alien hurricanes.
Well, Cristobal is a tropical storm. I don't think it ever made hurricane status.
The next one after Faye, though, is Gustav, and that's the one that set off the 12-year-old boys. See, there you go.
Oh, Fausto and Gustav?
This is Atlantic?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You're
going to
have Gustav?
Here comes Hurricane Fausto. I'm scared.
I knew it was something like it,
Gustav.
But yeah, it was Gustav that set the 12-year-olds in.
And previously it was Bertha.
Bertha.
In one piece of trivia,
that's
Bertha.
That's a big fat hurricane.
Well, it's funny you said that. Bertha became the longest-lived tropical storm to ever hit in July. How's that? So it was big.
Wow.
Big Bertha.
Thank you, Mr. Hurricane Trivia.
I was just looking stuff up because I wanted to find out what that F was. It's Fausto.
Fausto. All right. Fausto and Gustav. More with Ed Royce coming up. John and Ken, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Crystal clear information. This is KFI.
Tonight at 7 on Kennedy and Suits, Obama's plane is leaving Israel as we speak, and peace has broken out all over. Oh, wait. No, it hasn't.
John and Ken Show. John Cobalt and Ken Champagne on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. We're talking with Ed Royce, the congressman from Fullerton. He's got a new piece of legislation that he's sponsoring, the American Energy Act, and he's trying to get support to lower gas prices by starting to drill everywhere. You know, drill offshore, drill into oil shale, which is oil that's in rock, in shale rock. You can actually, I guess, drain the oil out of the rock. You can turn coal into gas through a liquefaction process. There's all kinds of ideas that he's pushing. Ed, you can drill offshore, you can drill up in the Arctic, you can do all the things you said, but then everybody starts screaming how it's going to foul the environment, and it seems like the debate stops dead.
But we have to realize that technology has come a long way, and right now we're talking about a little area that would be much smaller than LAX Airport, where you could take out of Alaska, out of that Arctic coastal plain there, you could take about 1 million barrels of oil per day, which would go a long way.
That have a real material effect?
Yes, absolutely.
But 1 million barrels is not that
no,
much.
No, 1 million barrels a day. I mean, our problem right now, and we talked to the former CIA director, he said that the OPEC cartel, you know, spearheaded by Saudi Arabia, is frankly keeping oil supply tight to prop up prices. And not only is the Saudi production lower than it was 2 years ago, and that's despite this increase in demand, but the cartel also convinced other members to delete 2.4 million barrels a day from the global oil market. So what he was telling us is that this is one of the things, it's a national security issue.
Because, let me just interrupt you a second.
Right.
I'm all for drilling oil everywhere. Okay, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it seems to really convince the public that it's worth the environmental risk, whatever that is, that you've got to indicate that this is going to have a significant effect on price. If it's going to bring an incremental amount of oil 10 years from now, I don't know that that's going to sway the public to say, okay, it's worth taking the risk. They want to know this is really going to work. It's really going to be meaningful.
The Federal Reserve Chairman thinks that because of the futures market, because of the way this works, You could bring it online in 5 years, but if it looks like it's coming online, it draws the price down now. And remember, we're not just talking about that drilling. We're talking about the drilling right now that Cuba and Venezuela is taking advantage of off the coast of Florida. If you allow the United States to drill there and elsewhere, that's 2.5 million barrels a day there. So as we go down the list of different ways to produce energy and lift these moratoriums, we can suddenly dramatically increase energy production in the United States. I mean, France gets 80% of its energy for its grid from nuclear. Now, we haven't had a plant built here, you know, in a generation.
Well, it seems we're afraid of everything. We're afraid of environmental damage, the ocean being fouled, the Arctic being fouled, a nuclear plant going off. It's like we're paralyzed by fear.
So we're stuck with imported oil.
So, but, yeah, we're in hock to Saudi Arabia and all the other crazy nations.
But here's one of the points the former CIA director made. He said, you know, we drill here a lot more cautiously, carefully, and cleanly than is done over in Russia, than is done down off the coast of Mexico.
Well, everybody's so got the Exxon Valdez in their head.
Yeah, but... But
that's the problem, is everybody has that vision of what that drunken, whatever he did, caused so much foulness that an entire generation of people said, oh, I don't want to see that again.
But oil is $140 a barrel, and we are decreasing our production out of the United States. And we cannot let the cartel game us and use us to transfer that much wealth, $10 trillion over the next decade if we don't do anything, into their coffers because... You know, they could own our companies with their sovereign wealth funds. We've got to do something to, you know, at least get some domestic production up to drive the price down so that their profits aren't so high and so that we don't tank our own economy, which is where we're headed right now. You know, what we're doing now to the price of gasoline at the pump and especially to our manufacturing, we have got to get this down. And one quick way to do it is to move on this supply. I think there's enough pressure out there from people. I know Democratic members tell me they're feeling the heat. It's just the Democratic leadership that doesn't want to allow the vote. So what we're trying to do right now, of course, is get the word out about this, put the pressure on, and see if we can't force a vote on more domestic production using our own natural resources while we wait and have, you know, a program to offer an incentive, which we've got in the bill. So over time, lithium, you know, ion lithium batteries are going to eventually produce hybrid vehicles that'll go 60 miles before you cut over to gasoline on a battery. By the time you get to that point, you can go 200 miles on a gallon of gasoline, but that's 10 years away. We've got to do something now.
All right, Ed, thanks for coming on with us.
Absolutely.
Ed Rice, Congressman from Fullerton.
Brand new Energy Act. All right, when we come back, we got a little more detail about Governor Schwarzenegger apparently wanting to reduce state workers' pay to minimum wage until we get a budget.
We got that clip of him on the Sunday TV show, right?
We do. He was on with George Stephanopoulos talking about how being a flip-flopper ain't such a bad thing.
And you got to hear this.
We'll explain also how he thinks he can legally reduce state workers' pay to federal minimum wage, and that's got the unions upset. All of this is coming up, and also you're going to read that Dan Walters column about comparing him to Jerry Brown.
It's very funny.
People may be tired of him.
John and Ken show on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Coming up tonight on Kennedy in Suits, don't ask, don't tell. Well,
yes.
I'm going to ask Captain Suits, and he better tell me what really happened in the Army. It's coming up tonight on Kennedy in Suits.
The John and Ken show. John Cobalt and Ken Champeau on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
I just wanted to mention this story. This happens, it seems, every few years. Apparently, an elderly man was found dead in a parked car that had been ticketed earlier in the day. That's not a snicker. An area near Pico Rivera. A passerby noticed the man in the driver's seat of this black Lincoln Town car.
It was Ray Lopez.
At about 7:50 p.m., and apparently the ticket was marked as being written at 11 a.m. The poor man was out there all day, says one woman who was nearby.
Baking inside the car?
Yeah, whether or not he was already dead, I mean...
People's thinking.
Yeah.
Says that they can't say whether or not the man was in his car at the time the ticket was issued, or if he returned to the car later, saw the ticket and died.
The ticket sent him over the edge.
Street signs forbid parking on that side of the street. Oh, listen to this. From 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., they got that car right away at 11 a.m.
I know.
For street cleaning.
So that meter maid, she didn't peer into the car to see if there's anyone inside, huh?
Or it's possible he did, now, he came to the car later and died. They didn't find him in there till 7:50 p.m.
Was he dead?
Like 8 hours later.
Dead at the steering wheel or stretched out in the back seat?
No, he was sitting at the driver's seat. I don't know whether or not he was pitched over the steering wheel.
Well,
he was
probably angry over the ticket. Had a heart attack.
There was apparently a lot of complaints that this particular street, because it's got a lot of growing businesses, has a lot of big rigs tying up multiple parking spaces. So they've really been cracking down around there, and sure enough, they got this car ticketed.
And it killed him. That meter maid's responsible for the poor guy's death.
The case is being investigated by the Sheriff's Department homicide detectives.
If he was in there in a hot, closed-up car for a few hours dead, what do you think that smelled like when they opened the door? Pico Rivera.
It would be sad to learn that the little meter maid woman didn't see him dead while she's putting a ticket on the windshield.
It's like, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Maybe she thought he was sleeping.
Yeah, you're playing
dead. But she at least knock and say, could you move? No. I don't want to give you a ticket.
She just wants to get credit for the ticket. So she probably said, yeah, you're sleeping. Nice try.
As we reported earlier this hour, Governor Schwarzenegger is planning to cut the pay of I almost choked, 200,000 state workers to the federal minimum wage of $6.55 an hour until they get a budget signed.
Because they're running out of money.
You can't
do that.
Well,
if they're union members, you can't do that.
The LA Times has actually got a hold of the executive order, and it's available on the website that Schwarzenegger plans to sign to do this.
I am the governor.
That's right. And there's a part of this order that cites, let me see if I can find it. Oh, May 1st, 2003. The California Supreme Court, in a case called White versus Davis, that'd be Gumby, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Issued a decision that in conjunction with other pre-existing court orders clarified that during a period that there is no state budget in place, federal labor laws require the state to pay its non-exempt FLSA employees, whatever that is, either the federal minimum wage or for those who work overtime, their full salaries.
Yes.
Then he goes on to say, whereas it is now known that a budget is not known when a budget will be adopted for the next fiscal year and blah, blah, blah. So he cites this court case, John, from 5 years ago.
All right. It's hard to believe that all the union workers are going to be legally forced to take minimum wage.
You know, I'm wondering.
That's going to be a bloody court fight.
If that case was kind of the inverse universe and that Gumby was threatening not to pay state workers anything until we had a budget, they went to court and the California Supreme Court said, no, you have to at least pay them the federal minimum wage. So Schwarzenegger seizing on that to reduce their pay. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm wondering if that's what it is.
I don't know. We'll probably find out more about tomorrow, though.
Wow.
But that's curious. I just, I've heard of, you know, people being, you know, furloughed and like involuntary furloughs, temporary layoffs. But the idea of reducing the salary for work performed. See, because if you lay somebody off.
Well, they will get it later when we have a budget. It's not that they're never
going to
get it.
So it's going to be deferred.
It's deferred. And they think that they can save us $1 billion a month with this. So think about, why don't we just keep doing this?
Yeah, really. Until they all quit.
$1 billion a month? I'm getting greedy.
Just give minimum wage to all the state workers until they quit.
Times 12 is $12 billion. What's our deficit?
Yeah.
That's close.
A year's worth of minimum wage.
The order also calls for the state to immediately lay off 19,000 part-time workers.
Good. I don't care what they do. Bye. See ya. Go get real jobs.
Schwarzenegger appeared on This Week with George Stephanopoulos last weekend, and we've grabbed a little piece of audio we thought you might like to hear, because obviously Schwarzenegger, after about the first year he was governor, has completely turned around and is almost running an inverse universe as governor.
Well, he's
signing global warming bills, minimum wage bills, backing away from the Minutemen and the border and the illegal alien problem.
He's become an incoherent mess. Nobody really knows what it is he's for or against, what he believes in, what he's going to do, and increasingly nobody cares.
Well, he was elected, really, and totally, and primarily, to turn around our budget problem, was he not?
Permanently, yes.
That hasn't happened.
Said it would never happen again, and he said it's never going to happen again.
Well, we still have a $15 billion budget deficit carrying forward.
So we're going to play for you. You know, in that, he said he never was going to raise taxes. Now he's opened every tax under the sun. We're going to play this clip from the George Stephanopoulos show, and then we're going to read you a story that Dan Walters of the Sacramento Bee wrote around this clip. So play the clip first.
And in politics out there, they always say, well, now I don't know anymore what he really stands for. He has just changed his mind, and he's flip-flopping and all those kind of things. Let me tell you something. Flip-flopping is getting a bad rap, because I think it is great. when someone has made a mistake. And when someone has for 20 or 30 years been in the wrong place with his idea and with his ideology and says, you know something, I changed my mind. I'm now for this. As long as he's honest or she's honest, I think that is a wonderful thing. You can change your mind.
You've
There's nothing wrong with it.
I have
changed my mind on things and it is nothing wrong with it. But I just say it to the people. I said, look, I once thought this way. Now I think this way. End of story.
Well, wait a second. Hold time out. Well,
now he's kind of depends on what it is, too, you know?
Yeah, he's changed his mind on balancing the budget. That's what he said he was going to do so that this never happens again. Now he changed his mind and all these huge, humongous deficits don't matter. He just ran 2 years ago mocking Phil Angelides every 5 minutes for Angelides' tax proposals. Now all those tax proposals are cool?
I think it is great.
You can't change your mind on something huge like tax increases. Yeah.
He wants to be this
in 2 years.
He wants to be this breakthrough sort of nonpartisan governor. So he actually had the gall to say flip-flopping's getting a bad rap.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter what he thinks on any given day. I mean, if he changes his mind the week after, the month after, it's like, hey, I changed my mind. Now, it's one thing if well, as Dan Walters writes, if you change your mind, if the facts warrant it, I mean, that's a good thing.
That's why I said depends on what it is and depends on how important it is.
Because, like, Bush has proven to be a stubborn bonehead because he doesn't change his mind no matter what the facts are. But at the same time, you can't run for governor originally on balancing the budget for good and never raising taxes, then run again saying, we got to balance the budget and we're not going to raise taxes. And then after 4 or 5 years on the job saying, you know what, let's raise all the taxes. You can't do that. I mean, that's fraud. That's not flip-flopping. That's fraud. And you changed your mind because what? Because you're too lazy or too impotent to affect any change anymore?
Yes.
Because nobody's listening to you? The Democrats don't listen to you. They won't even let you in on the meeting.
You know what?
The Republicans think you're a joke. And they don't consider you even part of their party anymore.
His flip-flopping, too, wasn't a matter of principle and maybe his beliefs evolved. It was a matter of trying to become more popular.
Well, then,
his popularity, his approval rating sunk to lows after he, quote, tried to do something about our budget deficit. So he turned to more what he thought would be more popular things like the global warming and the minimum wage.
Yeah.
And he worked with the Democrats like Fabian Nunez on deals, and the media made him a darling. And because, and this is really the overriding factor, we were having some good economic times with the real estate boom. I'm afraid a rising tide lifts all boats. His popularity came up, too, for all these things together. Now it's sinking again because we're in a bad economy. We still have a huge deficit, and people are seeing him for what he is again.
He's incompetent.
And his approval ratings are back down.
He's incompetent. Nobody cares about his global warming. Now we come back. I want to read you the Dan Walters thing, comparing the Schwarzenegger days now to the final days of Jerry Brown.
Oh, man.
If you're old enough to remember, Jerry Brown was a joke. Near the end of his second term in the early 80s.
And that stool may become governor again.
Yeah. And he's looking like an elder statesman compared to the rest of them. John and Ken Show, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Well, duh.
Listen to me. Bill Handel, mornings at 5, right before Rush on KFI.
Coming up tonight on Kennedy and Suits, don't ask, don't tell. Well, I'm going to ask Captain Suits, and he better tell me what really happened in the Army. It's coming up tonight on Kennedy and Suits.
Flip-flopping is getting a bad rap because I think it is great when someone has made a mistake. And when someone has for 20 or 30 years been in the wrong place with his idea and with his ideology and says, you know something, I changed my mind.
You know, I love when he tries to defend something stupid. He just declares it great because he says so.
You know what? I think it is great.
You know what I think? Because I always love it when we think of ideas about sending people things.
Yeah.
We should send him pairs of flip-flops. He thinks it's great.
He thinks it's great, yeah.
Yeah, send Schwarzenegger flip-flops.
I think it is great.
Flip-flopping means we can't trust you. We have no confidence in you anymore that you're going to do the right thing for us. You know, we pay your salary, we voted you in, we gave you power, you've squandered it all. I mean, has anybody squandered more of an opportunity than Schwarzenegger? Has anybody been a bigger failure based on expectations and possibilities than
He's only convinced me that in the end he really just wanted to be governor.
Yeah, that's what
it
is.
We didn't really know what he was because he never held office before, but we thought he was somebody that was going to take care of the runaway spending. Hasn't happened. How many billions more have we spent in the last 5 years?
It's just... Now, Dan Walters, who is this enormous ancient writer for the Sacramento Bee.
Oh, yeah, he's an eater.
Yeah, he said when Jerry Brown was serving as governor 30 years ago, he gained a well-deserved reputation for changing positions as easily as most folks change their socks. And he said the big moment was when Brown denounced Prop 13 as a ripoff before the 1978 election and then declared himself to be a born-again tax cutter afterward, slashing state taxes. And he said something similar to Schwarzenegger. Nothing in life is so rigid that there aren't developments. That's true in politics. That's true in theology. That's true in personal relations. And for the small minds that slavishly adhere to foolish consistency, their irrelevance is their best reward.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like Schwarzenegger in the kind of high way that Brown speaks.
And eventually, though, he refused to order spraying for the Mediterranean fruit flies.
Sure, the med flies, yeah.
Yeah, then changed his mind and ordered the spraying. And by the end, everybody just...
Oh, that was a big controversy.
Yeah, he ran for U.S. Senate and he got bounced out. And he said, you know, I think people got tired of my voice. They got tired of seeing me on television. And frankly, I got a little tired of it. And so, you know, now we've got a modern version of Brown. In fact, Walters writes, the politician who should be paying attention to Brown's history is Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's traveling the same path that made his predecessor a laughingstock, demonstrating by word and deed that he has few, if any, bedrock beliefs and is willing to shift positions instantaneously depending on which way the wind is blowing. Schwarzenegger came to the governorship nearly 5 years ago promising action, action, action on the state's pressing problems, especially its immense budget deficit. And then he goes on to quote Schwarzenegger on the Stephanopoulos show saying, flip-flopping is getting a bad rap.
The only reason he became governor was to do something about the state's budget problems, and it hasn't happened.
Well,
we just had a respite thanks to the real estate run-up and a good economy, but we're right back where we were 5 years ago. So he's been a failure.
Walter says there's nothing wrong with changing one's mind if the facts warrant. It's commendable. But that's different from betraying principles and reneging on promises, which is how Schwarzenegger is now seen.
Absolutely.
And that is the big difference. He hasn't come and explained why we should go for all his crazy tax schemes, why he's changed his mind, because he can't explain it. Somewhere inside him, he knows he should have been the hockey goalie and refused to sign off on all the huge budget increases.
Instead, he saw an opportunity to get on the cover of Time magazine because, quote, he's a leading Republican who wanted to do something about the global warming. So he took that opportunity. It gave him a nice run there for a year, but now he's back where he started. We still have a budget problem.
See, by being bipartisan, what he did is he signed on to Democratic budget philosophies, which in California always end up
a disaster.
A sea of debt. So by being bipartisan, he agreed with the same group of people that ran us over the cliff 5 years ago. And he jumped on board and went off the cliff again. So how's that being bipartisan? The people had told him, the people of a Democratic state had elected him with a large majority. Remember, he and Tom McClintock got 61% of the vote. That was 61% of so-called liberal California saying, we don't want this.
So we've had it.
Fix it. And instead, he jumped on board with the same group that caused the recall.
Right. So he goes along with the excessive spending, but because he doesn't raise taxes, not that we want him to do that, it's the one thing he hasn't done since he's been governor, here we are in the same hole.
So now his approval rating, new field poll just came out, it's 40%.
Yeah, I thought it'd be even lower. All right.
It's near his lowest rate.
We got a chance to talk to Kennedy in Suits here briefly coming up next. What do I have besides Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Because we've been hearing that all afternoon.
The holy man leaves.
We won't tell you.
The holy man's leaving the holy city. Will his trip backfire?
Obama. Okay.
Yeah. The Messiah.
And Katie Couric claims that sexism is worse than racism. That white bitch.
And she knows. Oh. She's hot.
All right. That's coming up. Aaron Bender has the news next. CNR at 3. John and Ken, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Wednesday, July 23rd.
Imagine four people talking about the news like nobody's listening. And everybody's drunk. Except nobody's drunk and everyone's listening.
Handle on the news.
Tomorrow morning at 6 on Bill Handel.
Southern California's KFI.
Los Angeles. Angeles, Orange County.
News on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks.
A long night along the Tex-Mex border. I'm Aaron Bender. This is the 7 o'clock news on KFI. Strong winds and rain have been pounding parts of Texas as Hurricane Dolly moves through. Red Cross Disaster Operations VP Armand Maselli says thousands of people have evacuated.
At this point, our emphasis is going to be on support.